Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 50. Trying to build on the records of yesterday. Bizarre world, and that's what we're going to talk about with Mr. O'Neill here a little bit. What people's view of the world going forward is or should be. And you know, obviously if you're managing money for people, if you're managing your own money, if you're building something, these are pretty serious issues. And Kevin, how are you, bud?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Just interesting. We have recently actually quite a few new clients, and it is interesting how different everybody is, and how everybody's history and their portfolio and everything, and how everybody really needs a very personal touch. And you don't really just drive people into the square peg into the round hole. But it really, when you look at some of the pricing on stocks, and when you look at some of the pricing on other things, and you see some of the, not necessarily the politics, but you see the some of the numbers, you know, that you sort of can believe, sort of can't believe, and you wonder how do they all match, and or do they? And you know, for instance, there's two kind of things happened sort of together. One was the Oracle earnings last night, which we'll get into in a bit, because the straddle was $22, meaning the market's assessment of the movement would be $22. And usually the market's, you know, they're not always right, but it's fairly, you know, that's the markets are usually pretty educated. Well, the thing is up 50. It opened down, Kevin, like $4 or $5, maybe $10. And then it proceeds to rocket up 50. So that's essentially a $60 move. Now, the stock has doubled in the last year, and the revenue is up 13% from last year, which is pretty darn good, right? I mean, I'm not saying that isn't. That's pretty good. But we're talking about $60 movement, and they got 2.8 billion shares outstanding. So what are we talking? $160 billion in market cap in 5 minutes after the close. That used to be a lot of money, bud. You wonder what people, you know, because when people do this, now if it's other people's money, it's one thing. But I'm going to say you teach classes, and some of the classes that I used to be in, I never taught anything. But it's all about when you're spending your own money, when you're investing, it's sort of very serious business, and it takes all kinds of predictions, all kinds of cost of capital. And you better be right on at least a few of them. You're not going to be right on all of them. Because late in the day yesterday, right before the things came out for Oracle, some kind of report, and I should know who the whole report was, but it was, I think it was Morgan Stanley. Not positive, though, Kevin, but it was that last year, I don't know if it's calendar year or the 12 months, I mean, it just kind of blew across the TV. They said that something like 85% of Americans were losers last year in the wage increase versus inflation. And of course they're losing. Oracle's now up $79. So that's four times the straddle. So the stock is up 32% By the way, they were up $40 last earnings. So now, and these guys are now up to 13, 14 times revenue. You got to wonder, but get back to what I was saying. They said the top 10% they thought was ahead of the game, earnings versus, which probably means stock holdings and other stuff. So 90% of the population is essentially down on the year, you know, a little bit. So now you have, you and I are either valuing Oracle stock, we're valuing Apple stock, we're valuing some other kind of stock, whatever the hell it is, or we're valuing the Bears Stadium. In my opinion, same subject. Okay, what does that mean? What is the world going to look like 5 years from now in Arlington Heights? Are the 90% of the people... This is not opinion. This is just me asking the question. Are we talking about trying to get the 90% of the people who don't seem to be staying even? Are we talking about $100,000 seat licenses? $5,000? $20,000? What do we think the ticket prices are going to be 5 years from now? $400? $200? Same as they are now? Or are we saying that the companies like Oracle, which is trying to work its way into the seven, are they going to own 10 skyboxes a piece? Are they going to own, you know, 100 tickets a piece that they dole out to schmucks like us when they feel like it? I mean, who's going to pay for this, at what prices and at what time? And I tell you what, if I had to do that, I don't know what I'd do. I'd have to grab you guys with me and say, what do we think the people in the great unwashed side of Soldier Field, assuming they can make it out to Arlington Park? And the tickets now, I'm guessing, Kevin, are 85 or 90 for the one side. They might be 100. Are they going to be 300? Are they going to be 500? It's a big market. Maybe you can get away with it here in Chicago or Green Bay, but it's. I mean, what are we doing here? What do you make of all this?
Well, because that was a nice little rant you had going there.
Well, they're all just questions. I mean, because if you and I were putting this stuff on the blackboard, we'd want to know this stuff, wouldn't we?
Yeah. So, as you know, I think, Tom, it's even bigger than just looking at the economics. We're just in kind of a bizarro world, period. And economics, it shows up in there. It shows up in markets. It shows up in valuations, but it also shows up in many ways, maybe as the money drives society and it drives, you know, the agendas of the few, maybe the rest of it is just how we distract the population. But you know, the example, another of many examples, because I don't, you know, I'm not willing to say anecdotes count for everything, except that we just have so many. Look at the young woman that got killed in Charlotte and how the judicial system let her down. Look at the whole agenda that we have built around transsexuals, and you know how much emphasis that gets, considering what percentage of the population is really involved. There's just so many really strange things in there that, you know, in many ways, Tom, I hear you talk about, you know, asking the questions, and I say, well, you know, it's what you expect. It's just part of the whole bizarro world that has become the everyday norm for us.
Is there some basic lack, and I'm not going to go back to my. You know, Catholic education or something, but I don't know that. It seemed to me, and again, this is, you know, Andrew, don't play Mayberry on me, but it seemed to me that if you don't have, and I think Jefferson said it first, that if you don't have some sort of a moral fiber or some sort of, I mean, he used the term religion, but if you don't have some sort of a guide to what you're doing that goes beyond what's written down on a piece of paper, even if it is the Constitution, you're essentially doomed. If people don't have an idea of, wait a minute, what did Sam Irvin say in the Watergate? I don't care if it's legal. it just ain't right, or something like that. Wasn't that his famous line? I think we've somewhat lost some of that. I mean, we're into the, and we talk about the trading floor all the time, Kevin. There's always going to be a couple of guys that try and push the envelope. That's just allegedly human nature. But the overall opinion of people who traded on the CBOE, since New York never wanted us in the first place, they thought we were a bastard exchange and people should just buy stock and blah, blah, blah. And everybody really wanted the place to be as, you know, purer than Pharaoh's wife, if it's ever popular, because nobody ever wanted to be tarred with the brush that, oh, you guys are all a bunch of crooks. Nobody ever wanted that. So in terms of policing ourselves, I've never seen a place quite like that, because everybody knew that if you degenerate into something where if you're not cheating, you're not trying, or you can't, if you're not cheating, you can't make a living here. Nobody wanted that. And it wasn't like everybody went to church and put their money in the basket every Sunday. It was just a moral feeling, somewhat compounded by business, that this needed to be a straight place. And somehow it's almost at a point now where if you aren't cheating, you're not trying. And once you get there, I don't think all the judges, all the policemen, all the laws in the world, you know, put another way, Kevin, if 3 people out of 1,000 are basically assholes, 997 can deal with it. If it becomes 300 and everybody's cheating every time they can, I don't think the 700 can deal with it. And I think that's kind of where we're at.
Well, that's an interesting way of wording it. I think to a large degree you're right about that. I hate to agree with you.
There's always been outliers in behavior, right? There's always been people that were murderers. There's always something, but unfortunately. But if it's such a minority, even if your justice system is sloppy, there is some attempt to deal with it, right? And
there does have to be an underlying moral code to what we do, and that's actually how the Constitution was written, and that may be why there's so much disdain for it in some circles. I just think there's also a shred of common sense that could be applied and that often isn't.
Well, my
and we go off the rails in that respect too.
Well, my uncle, pretty religious guy. He passed a hat every Sunday at Nativity Church, the Lithuanian church. But when my dad died, he was pretty much my guy, and we'd drive around. He was a fighter pilot in World War II. He had a few kills, I think. So a lot of what happened during the normal day wouldn't faze him all that much, right, Kevin? But if you had somebody behind you shooting, everything else is kind of calm compared to that, right? Of course, I guess you got people behind you shooting now on Iran, but he used to say to me, we'd see some guy do some really stupid in traffic. He'd go, Tom, if everybody behaved like that, would we have chaos or would we have order? And it was kind of a simple question. If everybody did that, could we all live together? You know, and the answer, and if you look at the history of all this, I mean, we talk about the history of economics that Hal's writing the class for, and I took, God, was it 2 quarters or 3 quarters in? You look at people way back in the day, if you read any history, and I'm not big on this. I mean, John Flanagan's a prior expert on this, but you look at like the Indian tribes here, and there were reasons why they all used the term behaved or lived like they did. They really didn't have domestic animals and really didn't farm a lot. Now, in Mexico, they did, and here, I mean, you know, just in general what I'm saying now, but when you decide we have domestic animals, I don't think Indians had chickens, did they? Or I don't think they had cattle. I don't think. But it's when they hunted buffalo, and you wandered where the buffalo went. So you're and there were places like that in Asia and so forth. But when all of a sudden everybody decided, okay, we're all going to live in one spot, immediately they said, okay, wait a minute. You can't go busting into somebody else's teepee. You can't be doing this. You can't be doing that. Where if everybody's running around all day chasing the buffalo, nobody really cares what anybody did, right? I mean, as you start to live together, you start to have all these things that have to do with order. and you do business, there's ways of doing business. If you're going to pay somebody, if you're going to do something for somebody, does he have to pay you? And I think somehow or another, I won't say this generation or whatever, they think this stuff all got here by magic and don't really have a feel for what came before and how it got here. I mean, you look at like the judicial system, and I'm going to take your word for it. I don't know what the lady you're talking about, but okay, a lot of people get screwed in the judicial system, unfortunately. And now the question is, why are they? Why aren't we? And now you have a generation that reads, you know, three lines on their X or whatever the hell they've got, and they're going to be a juror. Oh no, the person's guilty. Screw them. Or they're not guilty. Or I like them. Or they're not. I mean, this trial by public opinion. If you were to ask any of these people, how did the judicial system get here? And if you look back in history for how many thousands of years, Kevin, it wasn't for the Brits and us to have this kind of a judicial system. This is not normal. This took people's lives to get here, right? And we don't seem to have anywhere near the respect for it, I think, that you and I have. Even though you and I argue about a bunch of stuff, we argue about how we can make our systems better. I don't think either one of us ever argue that, God, if you think somebody's guilty, you should go shoot them because you saw it on YouTube. I mean, I don't think the respect for what we have and how we got it and how dear it is there. I mean, am I wrong there? Am I just being an old grumpy guy?
I think there's a large dose of that, and maybe that's because it undermines itself. And so we may be having the chicken and egg argument about when do you lose respect? Do you lose respect because of the way the judicial system operates, or do you lose respect and that changes the way the judicial system operates? And I'm not sure which one in that particular case. I'm not sure which one I would apply. I'd have to give that some thought. I'll tell you what my hypothesis is at that point. But in the Charlotte case, like so many others, it's just somebody who I'm amazed that you haven't seen the video of it because it's all over the place. Guy just stood up and started stabbing the young woman in front of him. She was a Ukrainian refugee, actually. And this guy is out on, you know, after 14 arrests, is out on a promise to show up for his court date, and this, you know, this was a philosophy that gained a lot of traction in the aftermath of the George Floyd incident. So, And that's why I say it's an example of not necessarily a one-off here. It's not a one-off anymore. It's something we've done. And, you know, I just think common sense has been lost. And that will erode the credibility of the judicial system. It'll erode the credibility, as we look at some of the stuff that you talk about all the time with the markets, where it defies common sense, as we start to just, you know, not live in that world, then are we really just undermining the credibility of everything as we go, and so the rules get tossed out and we just go crazy?
Well, whatever direction,
or later, we're going to pay a price for it.
Well, I agree. Normally Wednesday's our night with the attorneys and judges, but I bumped into a few guys last night. We kind of almost were having the same conversation, Kevin. And you look at people that are, maybe you and I might say, boy, they should be like in jail. They were accused of this or, you know, whatever. It looks like they might have done it. Of course, they haven't been tried yet, and that's another. And my buddy, won't need a last name, my buddy Bill, who works all day, 26th Street, Maywood, Rolling Ghettos, one out in they call the one out there. There's all these people, trials, continuance. He said, if somebody lands in jail right now and gets arrested, and Bill wins, I'm going to say, Kevin, 80, 90% of his cases. Maybe it's less now. But he wins a fair share of them. A lot of them, they got the wrong guy. A lot of them, it's evidence isn't there. Police don't show up. And it's it's a system that, he said, but by and large, if you end up in the jail and you just wait there for your court date and you don't have any sort of bail or whatever you want to get out of there, it's a year and a half. Well, a year and a half's one hell of a lot of time if you're not guilty. Now, okay, so now, then somebody's going to say, we got to let these people out of here until it's their trial. It doesn't surprise me that out of 100 of them, 10 or 15 or 20 shouldn't be out on the street, and maybe you're going to do something again. I mean, when we do these things, and I think you and I, for once, we're on the same page. Every time you do something, you got to sort of think it through, don't you? I mean,
that's where I said where the breakdown of common sense, because we all know it. We all look at some of this stuff and go, well, this just doesn't make sense. This is idiotic. And yet, it's situation normal, too.
Was it a situation normal, all bleeped up?
All effed up, yeah.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, we have a...
It's such a great word when you understand the etymology of it.
Yep. But that didn't come out of Catch-22, did it?
Bumar's another good one.
That didn't come out of Catch-22, did it? I don't think so.
Bumar?
Situated normal, all bleeped up. That was not...
No, I think the word snafu has been around for a long time.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, you sit there, and I mean, you and I have had this discussion, and really not any kind of a argued discussion, is what do you want to put your money for forward, and when you look at it and it looks expensive and you don't do it, I don't think, I'll say this on all three levels. Now, maybe in Michigan you got a better deal, but between Johnson, Pritzker, and Trump, I don't think any three of those people, and I thought Pritzker maybe could, but now I'm not so sure about him either. When they decide they're going to do something, I don't think any of the three of them don't even realize, much less are capable, of sitting there. If you're the professor and so, wait a minute, Donald, wait a minute, Mr. Pritzker, wait a minute, Johnson, sit down, write me a 300-word essay on exactly where this is going if we do what you want us to do. I don't think either one of the three even dreamed of doing something like that. And yet you and I, that's part of our DNA, our education. Where did we lose that?
I don't know, but it was a long time ago.
But isn't that, hey, I'll go out and reaping
the results.
I'll go out and put a bunch of fertilizer on the lawn. Okay, well, wait a minute. I got four dogs. Am I going to keep the dogs off the lawn until it rains? I mean, am I going to let them go out and die? I mean, they're, everything you do has consequences, doesn't it? I mean, if you don't think about it at all, you mess everything up, don't you? Duh.
Well, what concerns me more is that I think people do understand the consequences in many cases, and they don't care.
Well, some people, I think, do know. They know the bad consequences, and they seriously take advantage of them. There might be some idea out of the state, the Fed, somebody about some company getting, you know, some advantage, and five of the bleeps around them are run out and buy the place ahead of somebody else. You know, and that's, to me, that's sort of brutal. But how do we pull back to that? Because, I mean, the thing that goes on in the state, I mean, I look at what's happening in about the tariffs. And whether or not it's going to be, you know, who knows, they go through or not, we'll see what the Supreme Court does. But we've got Bessin out there basically whining about what a mess it's going to be if all of a sudden they got to pay this money back, which I don't think they're ever going to pay it back, Kevin. I disagree with Carl on that. But anyway, cause I can't imagine you or me getting a check, do you? If we bought something at Walmart, did Walmart pay the tariff on? Is Walmart going to pass it through to us? I don't see how that even...
Hesitate to ask.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell that would. But now, the same thing happened here, dumb mayor here in Chicago. What about the red light cameras? They were declared, you know, screwed up by a judge because what did they do? They shortened the yellow lights on them or some crap? So you're going to get caught no matter what because there was no yellow. Anyway, so the first thing out of the knucklehead's mouth is, whoa, what are we going to do? We already spent the money. Same thing. It's the exact same message as our Secretary of the Treasury. What are we going to do? We already spent the dough.
Built it into the future budget, too.
So. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the same. Okay, we did something that maybe isn't going to hold up, but But it wasn't like we saved the dough just in case. We spent it. Like, okay, then. I mean, to me, it's bizarre. I don't know how you... But to get back to the jail stuff, if you... There was a special on... God, Kevin, I don't think you saw it. I think it was on 60 Minutes a while ago. That the jails in Nevada, now that Nevada's gotten bigger and maybe has more crooks, I don't have to do that anymore. Because it had to do when O.J. was in jail out there. If you are in Nevada jails, they have massive investments. Well, I don't know how massive they have to be. Everybody in there is supposed to learn a trade. So when you get out of there, you can essentially apply for a job and say, hey, I'm a mechanic, I change oil, I do something, I can do brake work or whatever it is, I can do carpentry. They don't just want you wandering out with nothing, because they get the idea you're going to be right back, because your only trade really is being a crook. And if there's probably an investment there, and everybody in Illinois, if you look at county jail, everybody, and I don't know, I'm sure it's probably the same up in your area, everybody will say, oh man, that's too big of an investment. But is anybody actually taking the Nevada model versus ours and said, okay, what is the investment per person? What does it cost to keep somebody here per day? What is the rate of people coming back in Nevada versus here? And actually put a pen to paper, and I say in a 14-column sheet of paper, and come back with some corner of an answer and said, you know what, this actually in over a 20-year span has saved people money in Nevada. Or maybe it was a horrible idea. Does anybody even know? I mean, the idea, oh no, it's way too expensive. Well, that's a two-second comment on a pretty big problem. Has anybody actually worked through it and found out, can you actually save money by having a school or two in the jail or something? I don't know. Maybe you can. But how would anybody know?
The only way you know is to is like everything else. And this is part of what I'm getting at with the common sense, part of what I'm getting at with the court system, part of what I'm getting at with a lot of things, is it's one thing to have an idea. But what do you do when you have an idea? Do you just say, okay, we're doing that from now on, that's what we're going to do? Or is it, as you suggested, maybe we have a pilot program, maybe we measure the results, maybe we, as we measure the results, if we like them, then we can expand the program. If we don't like them, then we can curtail the program. If we see that it might still work out, if we tweaked it a little bit, we can do that. This is how, when you get away from all the policymakers, this is how normal people live. And this is why I keep going back to common sense, is that a lot of these approaches just, they defy common sense and undermine the credibility of their own institutions as a result of that.
Kevin, do you think that sort of you've taken us, by the way, to a good spot. You've taken us into almost like executive compensation. Now, if you were going to derive, by the way, I found this one of the hardest things we did in the University of Chicago, only because the professor would grab somebody's compensation package and read it out loud to the rest of the class, and everybody go, nah, boy, that sucks. So you didn't want it to be yours, right? It's actually very hard to do. If what you and I are talking about, this kind of, by the way, the term would be pilot program, right?
If you call it pilot program, you can call it hypothesis testing. It doesn't matter.
Okay, but where I'm going with this is that if you and I want to do this, and somebody says, okay, you two bozos can do this, it's probably going to be a five-year program, right? Maybe it's one jail in the state.
Might be five, might be less.
Okay, but it's what I'm getting at is it's going to be more than two, or probably maybe more than four, maybe. So now the question is, if we were to design a government and we wanted people to do stuff like this that made sense, do you really want to elect people every 2 years? Do you think that there's any way on earth that Brandon Johnson who's hanging by a thread, if he's hanging by at all, is going to initiate some major five-year program at the county jail. And one, if he's out of there in 2 years, is the first thing the next guy going to do is cancel. I mean, it seems like if we wanted our people to behave like you and I sort of want them to, is the structure correct for that to happen? It seemed like it sort of used to be. I mean, even in stuff like, you didn't have, you know, Eisenhower doing this with the military and having this kind of a military plan, and then Kennedy coming in and saying, all right, it was something totally different. But now we sort of have. The Democrats sometimes de-emphasized some of the military stuff. And some Republicans had too, by the way. And all of a sudden people, you know, Reagan came in and he wanted it stronger with the goal to be to get rid of, outspend Russia, which he did. whether it was the right thing to do or not, it seemed to work. But now we have, you know, Trump put some money in there. I don't know if he actually has given him much more dough. But now, and you know, I don't know that there's a 5-year plan even for that. That if somebody loses an election, the next guy has to come in and say, I don't want that 5-year plan. It seems like it was done correctly with people on both sides of the aisle involved. It should, you know, it should win the test of time. And it doesn't seem like stuff is. Does it mean they're doing a shitty job? Does it mean people got to turn around what the other guy does no matter what? And I'm not just accusing Trump of this. I mean, every administration seems like they want to do that. Is it possible to do the stuff that you and I want in the way our government is designed, I guess is my question.
Well, it sort of depends on the mindset of the people involved, and let me explain that. Because one of the things that is getting a lot of discussion in terms of politics today is the 80-20 issues. In other words, there are a number of issues that almost everybody agrees. You know, to a large extent, almost anybody salutes the idea of a secure border and not having a flood of people coming across the border, undocumented and just released into the country. I mean, that, you know, you can just go look at the polling on it. You know, most people say, no, we should have a more secure border. You know, you can debate over how we're doing deportations and things. But in terms of securing the border itself, that is great popularity. When it comes to transgender, I think most people say, hey, if an adult wants to go trans, with or without surgeries, however you want to do it, who cares? But don't start altering children, physically altering children. Don't do that. And that's an 80-20 type of...
Might be 90-10.
Pardon?
Might be 90-10.
Or 90-10 or 99-1, whatever it is. You know, most people don't, and yet you have a lot of radical voices. That one of the things that we're seeing, and this is one of the crime issues that's coming up, is I think a lot of the resistance to some of the Trump initiatives. So, for instance, Washington, even Muriel Bowser, mayor there has extended another 30 days because Trump only had, you know, with the District of Columbia, only had 30 days of ability to go and take things over, and Bowser has extended him another 30. So there are some people who will adapt. They understand the politics of it. They understand how important it is for people to clean up some of the rampant crime issues they're dealing with, and yet some of the resistance that you see elsewhere is that to the common sense issue of, yes, we have to clean it up, whatever, and do whatever it takes, obviously with limits. I'm not saying give unfettered authority to just go in and round people up and jail them, and I'm not suggesting that, but a lot of that resistance is, it's resistance to Trump himself, that people just, if Trump says the sky is blue, then I'm going to say it's pink, and I'm going to be in favor of a pink sky. And, you know, I think that's one case, but I think we've gotten polarized like that not just around Trump, but in terms of the political parties. They're the same thing when it comes to economics, when it comes to spending, when it comes to spending restraint. They're the same people. But boy, when it comes to all this social stuff, it is, if you say it's blue, I'm saying it's pink, and that's the way it's going to be.
I think you have an awful lot of people, and I don't have the piece of paper here in my office. In one of the cleanings, it must have went south. But very interesting article a guy wrote regarding people only thinking one side or the other. And this was before all the hatred and all the other crap got piled into it. But he said basically that regular people realize their vote is not, you should do it, everybody should walk down the block, that's the American system. But also, if you got a shred of brains, you realize that, you know, unless it's Virginia City and Ben Cartwright's the last vote, and it's tied for Little Joe and Haas to be mayor, you know, he's flipping a coin. That's not the way it is anymore. I mean, it doesn't really matter if I go down the block and vote. I mean, I always do it, but I mean, does one vote in Illinois really make a difference, or in a lot of other places? Some states, maybe it does, but certainly not in Illinois or in a red state. They say, okay,
it just seems to me, Tom, that we should be able to rally around those 80-20 rules. Now we go back to your comment earlier about, you know, will we have things that survive individual office holders? I think we could do that around those 80-20 issues or 90-10 issues or whatever we want. If we want to have initiatives built around that, then that should be able to survive the individuals, because that's what that's what the public will support, and we just don't do that.
Well, I think if you watch the what was the movie with what's his name's kid, the guy who did 24, was the accidental president or whatever it was, where everybody got killed except for him.
Oh yeah, Kiefer Sutherland played and secretary, something not considered a major.
He was like the Health and Human Services Secretary, so he was the guy they pull out whenever they have like the State of the Union meeting, and sure enough, somebody blew up Congress and killed everybody. So he became the president.
Yeah,
you know who that
designated survivor or something like that.
You know who? Remember the guy from? Was he a Notre Dame guy? Who was the guy? The guy from Wisconsin that was like the Secretary of Transportation years ago. Tell his name, Tommy something something. He had like
Thompson.
He was the guy at the end of the bench in the cabinet, right? So before like a State of the Union thing, these guys come get him in this big limousine and take him to the secure spot. Oh, you're the designated survivor. And he goes, what? So they sat there, they watched the State of the Union, and he says as soon as the thing was over, the guy's left. He had to call a cab back to his house or his apartment. He said, okay, they survived. See ya. He goes, it was the most bizarre night I ever spent. Did you ever hear that story from him?
I did not. And, you know, Tommy Thompson was an interesting cat because he was a very popular governor in Wisconsin.
Yeah, he said this was crazy. But anyway, that was the whole theme of the show. But what you said, you could have written this one script. The two parties obviously are fighting, you know, is who gets the control of what, because all new people in Congress or whatever, and they were talking about the Supreme Court, and he was a president, and he was going to, I guess he got to finish out the other guy's term, which was like 2 years or something. So he was talking about a lame duck. Kiefer Sutherland was a lame duck. So they all started fighting over these Supreme Court people, and finally one lady who was just, she was starting to get Alzheimer's, and she was helping him with the court, and she goes, no, I can't be on the court because I'm sick, but I'll help you. I'm okay for the next month. And her solution was exactly what you said. She goes, wait a minute, why don't we have one side pick, you know, essentially we'll pick the list, but have four of their guys, you know, conservative judges, and we'll have four liberal judges, and the compromise will be the ninth judge or the seventh judge, the ninth judge, well, seventh judge, won't be picked. Ninth judge, I'm going crazy here. The ninth judge won't be picked until after the next election. And she said, you know, 70-80% of the issues both sides agree on, pretty much. So the eight will be able to be fine. You know, we won't have that many 4-4s. They'll be able to be fine, and then if they have to take a couple of really big ones and push it out to 2 years until, you know, the next president gets elected, which could be you, that's fine. Which is exactly what you're talking about. Every single issue shouldn't be right down the middle. Be perfectly blunt, Kevin, if I can predict every vote on the Supreme Court, why do I need to pay these guys? Just ask me what they would have voted on. I got to believe you could predict most of them, too. Why do we need them if they could just...
Although, actually, I think we can predict a lot, but there's a lot we can't with this court. This court's been kind of interesting because Kavanaugh and Barrett have not been straight line, you know, the conservative view.
This is something different. This is somebody is pushing the ends of power envelope. And the weird part is I don't know where the hell I read this. It wasn't on YouTube, but I read this article about how if you really look at the Constitution, and it's supposed to have all these checks and balances, said the one real weakness, if that's what you're trying to accomplish, is the power presidency is pretty darn high. It's maybe too high. And
it's too high because Congress has ceded its authority to the president.
Well, the person said, the person writing this article said that the people sitting down in, was it Philadelphia, 1976, what the hell it was, they all knew, even though they knew the weaknesses of human beings pretty darn much, they all knew that the first president was going to be George Washington. And they thought every president was going to be like George Washington. And guess what? They haven't been. Altman, and there's many in history. I'm not even talking about the last two. I'm talking about many in history that if there's somebody really wanted to abuse a thing, they probably could. And to a certain extent, the Roosevelt administration did some of the same stuff. I mean, I looked at the... I think Kevin... You know, where's Jan when I need him? But the issue of interning American citizens into camps, the Japanese. Well, Roosevelt was never really behind that. There was some guy who... Was he a Secretary of Interior? I forget his name. He was really pushing that. It started to develop a momentum, and Roosevelt essentially didn't stop it. But it came out of the executive branch. I don't know if Congress ever, maybe they did have a bill for that. But it eventually made its way to the Supreme Court. And it took, you know, however the Supreme Court took their sweet time. And by the time 1945 rolled around near the end of the war, they, I think, ruled, no, you guys can't do this. You can't intern U.S. citizens. What's the matter with you? Well, there was only like 6 months left to go in the war, so they dragged their feet. And eventually, people were let out of there. Of course, all their belongings and stuff in their house and stuff were stolen by other people, which might have been the real reason for it in the first place. So the Supreme Court probably could stand on their hind legs and say, see, we did our job. It didn't help anybody, Kevin. So the idea that they actually can be, you know, something that pushes back on all this stuff, they really can't. Because if you want to be as a president, I'm not accusing anybody, if you want to be, you just shift gears, shift it to a slightly different agenda. Okay, you told me no this way, I'm going this way, and it's another year and a half. The way it's designed, if somebody really wanted to be an ass, and I'm not saying it, but if somebody really wanted to be, I don't think that they are an effective foil, the way it's designed. If somebody really wanted to go down that road, and I'm hoping Trump isn't, but if he did... I don't think they're
so far. Every time he's had a Supreme Court ruling against him, he's complied with it.
But he hasn't stopped. He shifts and goes another direction.
I say that. That doesn't mean he doesn't push it and say let's get a court decision on this, even on ones that, you know, theoretically have been decided in the past. So, for instance, birthright citizenship is going to get find its way to the Supreme Court. and he may lose, and maybe they have a persuasive argument. I don't know what to tell you about that other than, it hasn't stopped them from pushing it, but we do rely on the executive branch, we rely on Congress, we rely on the other, quote, co-equals to stand by those decisions. Some of the decisions I haven't agreed with along the way, we've been talking offline about, for instance, I actually talked online about it with Carla yesterday, the Obamacare decision, what Roberts did on that one. But ultimately, the decision stood, and that's the way it has been ever since then.
Baseball's not interstate commerce. Well, that one's lasted 80 years, too.
You can't unilaterally say that was a bad decision, therefore we're not doing that. And unfortunately, we did see that in the last administration, all that stuff built around, student loan forgiveness was just, well, okay, then we'll do it a different way, no matter what the court decides.
Without
used to brag about it.
I'm not accusing one side or the other. What I'm saying is, in my opinion, after watching this in the last however many long years I've been alive, and reading a lot about what happened during the Roosevelt administration, the idea that the Supreme Court is an effective counter to a run-amok president is don't think that way, because it's not. They may get some kind of ruling 2 years from now, but the damage is done and they're just going another way. I mean, I'm not saying Biden didn't do it. I'm not saying Obama did. I'm saying, to me, it's not. They don't have any enforcement power, and they're late, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. So we absolutely need them to. We need people to comply with it. There's voluntarily, because legally they have to, but there is a voluntary element to it. And if they don't, then we become that much more lawless a society.
Because I just think I don't think the people in 1776 ever designed it as a stop against a runaway president. I think that's supposed to be Congress's job. And we've had several presidents in a row that in certain areas were runaway presidents. I think Obama's decision on I feel this way on virtually every big thing, Kevin. I would never go to war if I had a 51-49 thing in the Senate and only my 51 people voted. If I can't convince 10 of the other side that we should be in this war, I got no business doing it. But that's my mentality. Now, if you get somebody who doesn't feel that way, then we go another direction, right? I would never. I thought at the time, I thought healthcare was one of the biggest single problems in this country, because they maybe knew about it more than some, because some of my Audrey's friends were in that business. And I would constantly, when we go off a few beers and a pizza, I would just like pick the guy's brain like I was a sponge. Wait a minute, that's how you guys get your money? That's never going to last. This insurance company's paying too much. This one doesn't pay anything. I mean, the thing was a cesspool. To do something that big, and I don't care if Obama did it, I don't care if Bush did it, the idea that you can ram it something that big without the other side having any part of it is insane. Just on a government side of it is nuts. If I can't put something together where I can't find five people on the other side of the aisle saying, yeah, this is a pretty good plan, or why can't I give, what was it when Teddy Kennedy died? What's his name? The guy from Arizona that nobody likes. Republican guy. He ran for president. Tells his name.
McCain.
When he goes, Teddy Kennedy was the best chairman he ever was on a committee with. He goes, if you had an idea, if you were Republican, they didn't care if you were Republican. They put the idea on the table. If it made sense, they got it in there. Everybody had their say. And when the thing came out of there, even if it was a Democratic bill, you felt you were a part of it. You can't take something as big as Obamacare and ram it down one side. How does anybody even think they could get away with that, Kevin? I mean, that's not functional. And look what's happened since. One side bitches about it, the other guy defends, the other side defends it. The fact is, it needs changing, right?
Yeah, Well, and you know, as I texted you yesterday, we kill things that we don't like. We, you know, or you kept sort of that I didn't invent it, therefore we're not doing it that way. But Paul Ryan, you know, had drafted a very thorough healthcare related bill. It was built a lot around tax credits, so I wasn't a big fan of it. But you know, but it was there, and he couldn't see the light of day because it wasn't taken up in committee, because he didn't have the votes to have it even discussed and present, you know, in committee and presented to the full Congress.
Well, didn't
and there was actually a meeting where people were discussing some of the healthcare issues, and President Obama acknowledged that, well, you know, that Ryan at least had the you know, had a leg to stand on in his arguments because he had a bill of his own. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
he did the work. We just kill things
if we never
want to do it crammed out in a different way.
Well, did Bush ignore it because of 9/11? By the way, speaking of which, we'll bring our Russell on in a second, but Andrew's girlfriend is going to get her real ID today, so in case she has to get on a plane.
Yeah.
When we talk about stupid stuff, is that one of the dumbest things we've ever done, this real ID thing? You know, this is all because of 9/11. You know, not one of those people used a driver's license to get on the plane. They used a passport. So why the hell are we have to do this?
Remember what I had to take in to get my real ID version of my... I don't remember if I had to take a birth certificate or something like that, because it wasn't that long ago, and I still don't remember. But if I just went in and said, renew my license, give me a real ID.
Oh, no. That ain't working. You know what helped me out was my license was up for renewal anyway. So the letter they send you to your address saying your license is up for renewal, that counts as one of your documents. Because if you don't have that one, you got to bring, like, you know, two or three utility bills, something else. I mean, it's a big long list. I don't know if I need my birth certificate. Plus, you don't get the ID. You go in there and they take all this crap and they fax it down to Springfield and you get it in the mail like 3 weeks later. So if you're flying tomorrow, it doesn't help you.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. So that's why there was a lot of advertisement around get it done now.
but not one of the hijackers used a driver's license. And that's the reason for it. 9/11.
Yeah, it is. It's a safety and security thing, which of course doesn't make us any safer or any more secure.
You know what? I'm surprised. The Luddite that I am, and I don't usually go anywhere. When people get their passport, I'm kind of surprised that more people don't pony up the extra whatever it is, $25, and get the little passport, because that is a real ID that you can put in your wall. You don't have to do it with your driver's license if you have one of those. And I said, why don't you just get one of those and get your passport? Why would I do that? Well, because it's a real ID, and if you've ever driven to Canada, then you can use that and not your passport. You still need the regular one if you fly, but why don't more people have that thing? If you're going to get your passport anyway, what's the difference? Just saying.
Okay.
And Russell's probably got one. But
I do have one.
But why do you suppose...
I have the little bitty one, yeah.
Now, why do you suppose it's okay if you drive into Canada, but you fly and you need the big one? What's the rule? What's that all about?
I don't know. I don't make the rules. So
maybe it would be better if we did make the rules.
Your favorite D.C. reporter's in Vancouver right now at a conference. You want me to ask her? My daughter's doing a presentation on what she did election night.
Wow. I guarantee you she didn't drive to Vancouver, so she probably...
She did not drive. Trust me on this one. She did not drive to Vancouver. Her dad got her to Vancouver.
Did you fly into Seattle?
I did not. No. Just flew her. There's one direct flight a day from Chicago. I flew her over from D.C. to Chicago and then there. And she's doing like her dad used to do. She's going to another conference in Colorado on the way back.
Wow.
And then she starts, I don't know if we've said this on the air, but because she told me I wasn't allowed to tell people for a long time. Next week, she starts as NBC's intern at the White House. So we're going to have all kinds of secret information coming out of the White House.
Wait.
So if she asks a question, Trump going to jump all over because he doesn't like CNBC?
That's it. Yeah, and she'd probably not take it particularly well either. So,
well, that's okay.
She probably. I don't know how she would take it if somebody told her it was a stupid question, which I've seen him do. So, that's a horrible, horrible question. Who are you?
Yeah. Well, remember that
she would ruminate on that for a week or two.
Well,
Funny thing is, most of the time when he says it's a stupid question, he's right because there are so many stupid questions asked.
Yeah.
Well, remember probably before you on the show, Russell, Kevin, remember Pedro da Costa?
Yeah.
He asked Janet Yellen a question regarding the information leakage that they were supposedly investigating. People were
following. Oh, yeah.
And you could see Grandma absolutely stiffen up. And there was a call to the Wall Street Journal, and he was never invited back. He was never allowed to go back because he asked that question.
If you pay close attention on, and I really do, just because I want to hear exactly what the man says, not what people tell me he said, I do watch those press conferences, and it's the rotation of the same people.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, somebody does ask a more difficult question, and they do seem to fall down the rotation.
Yeah.
It's not just Pedro da Costa.
He was bounced.
If you pay really close attention, yeah, he got booted. But if you pay really close attention, it's typically the exact same person for the first question, from the exact same organization, and at the last one they did. That's not who they called on.
Well, the guy from CNBC is always one or two when it comes to the Fed chair.
Yeah, Leisman's usually right after the Bloomberg person. And the Bloomberg person was skipped over this last time. So if I had all the time in the world, I'd go back and try to figure out why.
Well, you know, but
control over access like that is the same way in the sports world. And built around college sports as an example, it's probably even more acute. But, you know, it's a matter of, in the media world, you want to get into the club. You want to get into that club that covers the White House.
And
you don't want to do anything that's going to get you kicked out of it.
No, I think I've told her to just say I'll help with anything that needs help and do not complain about anything.
Well, my advice to her would be when she asks a question, ask people about process. Not specific cases, but how does one go about making a decision like this? Because people like to talk about that.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
And they're really happy. I used to get when I was doing the basketball side hustle, I used to get so much out of Mike Bray that way, rather than saying, "Well, why isn't this guy playing?" It was more. How do you go about getting a freshman into the playing rotation? What's the process there? And I'd get much more thorough answer that then I could apply to a specific situation rather than the other way around. So, I think learning how to ask the right questions is a big deal. But in reality, think of this in a college town. If you're ignored, if you're not getting access, you're not getting interviews with the college coaches, then you're left to cover high school. You can go from covering big time sports, major college sports, to being the high school beat reporter just because they don't like you and you don't get access.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, you see it in some of these stock prices. I mean, today, look, you're sitting in three stocks. The incredible increase in market value and in margin debt availability. We've got NVIDIA, it's all on the Oracle numbers last night. NVIDIA's up almost $5. They have 25 billion shares outstanding. So we're talking $125 billion in market cap right there. We got Microsoft up 7.5, and what do they have, like 7 or something? Billion, or is it 5? Now that's a bundle, and this Oracle. The straddle was $22 because we did a play in there. This thing's up $76. The revenue was up.
Yeah, and the straddle. What's funny about that is the straddle
was pricing about a 10% move, and the average move is like 13%. So the straddle was cheap.
Straddle was a little light.
But, yeah, no, straddle was cheap, which makes me wonder if some of this move is, you know, an overshot because people got caught on the wrong side.
Well, but also moved,
we'll see.
It also moved $40 last time, and usually doesn't happen twice in a row.
Yeah. Well, no, I've heard you talking about it the first hour, and I looked at the history, and if you look at the last 3 years of earnings, there are more moves greater than 10% than less. But this is an outrageous move. Yeah, I hear people talk. I got called by a reporter about AI stocks, and I think I talked about this last week, and they didn't like my answer because I think it was too difficult. But what I said was you really should be dividing the AI stocks into the companies that have to spend money on it and the companies that get paid for it. And Oracle, and they were asking it in the context of the Magnificent Seven stocks, because some of them are going to have to spend money on AI and some of them are going to get paid for AI. Oracle's getting paid for AI with the cloud, et cetera. NVIDIA is getting paid for AI. NVIDIA has nothing to do with the economy. It's all about how much money our company's going to have to spend to try to win the AI race. But if we backtrack, I don't know, almost 30 years, with the internet starting to come into its own and everybody having to spend money, I'll bet you there's a 33% move in Cisco at some point, earnings-wise. But Cisco was also one of the first canaries in the coal mine that the spending was stopping. So
was Oracle.
And that's why I think that's another reason that I think maybe Oracle is rallying to the upside. Is there a lot of people looking for the crack in the AI spending, and it just hasn't happened?
Well, but
yet.
It's up.
It'll probably take longer to happen than most people expect, much like the internet bubble.
Well, okay, but when you. If you look at some of them, I didn't go through all of them last night. You're probably ahead of me on this, but when you have a stock like Oracle, which has been running up spectacularly in the last quarter,
yeah.
So they come out with earnings and with revenue numbers. The revenues are up. I thought I saw 12.7% up from last year. Pretty friggin' good, right? I mean, there's no way you can say that's bad. Stock was already up 50% in the last year. Okay, so there's a concept in investing, and I think, you know, you've written books and so forth. The concept is the market is smart enough, if a company's going to start to do better the next year, the market is smart enough to sniff that out, and the stocks are going to appreciate in value because people understand that this good news is coming, which I think has been, you know, God bless my days in Chicago, I always thought the market was able to do that. I believe that totally. But now the concept has kind of changed a little bit. You would think that last quarter when Oracle was up $40, it went up from like 170 to 220 or something, that the anticipation was already there. When I first started the business, if a stock was running up, and all of a sudden they came out with an earnings report that kicked ass, the stock didn't go anywhere because people had already anticipated, and the numbers essentially, let everybody know that the market was right in the first place. But now it seems like everybody anticipated their revenue being up 13%. But now it's a greyhound race, and you just moved a rabbit another 40 yards ahead. Now, how much more does it have to grow into this price? I mean, are they going to be able to do another 12% this year or 15 or 20? I don't know. I mean, because now we're pushing, we have to be pushing 15 times revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of where Oracle got in 2000 when it collapsed. So we're starting to get to a number where even if I think this company is going to be the cat's ass, I'm not. What is this implying? They're going to double revenue this year? I mean, what do these numbers even tell you?
Well, they're not going to double, but
I'm saying, but the stock price has doubled in the last year.
Oh, I know. But yeah, the market cap has doubled on the company. Revenues are expected to go from, they've already finished 2025. They're on a funny calendar year, and they're halfway through their 2026. But the 2027 revenue number is about, it's about a 50% increase.
From this year?
Yeah.
50%.
Yeah, they're looking at so they did 57 billion in 25. They're going to do 67 billion in 26, and they're going to do 82 billion in 27 in revenues.
I don't know. Boy, I wouldn't go too far in the 27 number. I mean,
well, and that's exactly what I was saying when I was trying to use the Cisco analogy.
Well, I guess you bring me to my favorite question. Uh-huh. Let's say Oracle is right in the driver's seat, and they actually do increase $200 billion in revenue in 27.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Microsoft's priced to do the same thing. So is Nvidia. So is Apple to a certain extent. Google, Meta, maybe not so much. Amazon, yes. And I'm going to say I'll throw a couple others maybe in there. Certainly Palantir. A few others that are in there. I'll say this, and I very seldom go out on a limb and give a real opinion. They can't all do it, Russell.
Oh, no, they can't. And the thing is, they're not all the same. And they shouldn't be going up in a similar fashion. You know, you said Microsoft is up. Microsoft is a spender in this AI thing.
They're up 9% today.
Yeah, and they're a spender in this thing.
No, I mean, I'm sorry, up $9, 2%.
Okay, but still, there. I mean, that's where I think you need to be looking is, you know, who's got to spend money and who's going to get paid in the race. I don't care about picking the winners or losers in the race. I'd just be trying to figure out who gets paid. And right now, it's Nvidia. It's Oracle. I think Amazon is one with the cloud services. So that, you know, that's what you have to be looking at. Amazon's growth is not quite like Oracle's, but I know Nvidia's is. Nvidia's is ridiculous.
Okay, but they're also priced into.
Between 2025 and 2027, Nvidia's revenues are expected to more than double.
Well, Palantir's up $3 today. It's 2%. Stock's trading 165. You know what the revenue per share is?
What?
Buck and a half.
I don't even know that company that well, and I know that's kind of.
I don't either, but I mean it's a number.
All I know is the CEO was somewhere, and people started screaming at him about genocide and how his company was aiding in it.
Oh. By the way, were you listening to the first 15 minutes of the show?
I did. I was lurking around.
Well, I guess I would love you to sort of opine on this and that yesterday. Was that a Morgan Stanley report or somebody, one of those people, came out and said in their view of the last, I don't think it was the calendar year last year. I think it was the last 12 months, that something like 80 or 85% of the population is down on the income versus inflation number, and that the top 10% is ahead, which I think, you know,
I don't even think the top 10% is.
Well, I mean,
ahead.
This is what these guys came out with. What I'm trying to push together is if you take those kinds of numbers and you look at, you know, I think some income's going up a little bit, but if you pull the wealth of the stock market out of the income numbers, it's a whole different number, right? But if you look at it, income numbers, let's be generous, and the everybody's income's going to be up 3% in the next year and a half, which puts us to 2027 basically. And you look at the Bears stadium, you know, going to be complete in 2027. God knows how much the tickets are going to be, the seat licenses. And you look at Oracle, and they're saying we're going to be up, you know, $200 billion in revenue that year, and NVIDIA and Microsoft and everybody. And if everybody is not even making it, wages versus inflation, how in God's name does that mean that 15 other companies are going to close so Oracle can take over all their business, so they'll be the only one left there? Are they going to buy other places, in which case it's kind of a funky number? It looks to me like a lot of stuff doesn't match here. Just saying. How can it all match? I don't think it all can.
Oh, no, it can't. I mean, eventually there's going to have to be an adjustment around expectations across the board for lots of different things. And one of them is, you know, somehow or another, people's purchasing power is going to have to match up with the stuff they need to buy. And that may even result in, you know, economic slowing to the point of deflation. Oh. You know, I would not be, but I think it would take a while for that to work itself through.
I think the only way you're going to get any kind of deflation would be a sudden decrease in the money supply, and the only thing that could cause that is a crash in like Bitcoin or in the market.
Well, if the economy keeps slowing and people don't have jobs, I don't care how much money you're pumping into the system if it's not getting to the people that need to go to the grocery store.
No, but you can drive prices up.
It's just gonna keep helping our assets, which doesn't really help most people.
No, it doesn't. But you know, this is a really big discussion, Russell. And you know, and the weird part of it is I don't see anybody else having it. That's got me really afraid.
No, and don't you feel like there's so much missing of just basic economics in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's. Yep, you know, I saw a funny cartoon about about AI, and it's like a CEO going, "Oh, we're gonna adopt AI, we're gonna embrace AI," and somebody says, "How are you gonna make money with it?" And they're just sitting there with their question mark above their head.
Yeah,
and honestly, I feel like you could have said the same thing about crypto. Now I know crypto, Bitcoin's up over 100,000, etc. But is there anybody other than making money off of speculating in it? Is there anybody that's really making profits with Bitcoin?
You don't own anything.
No.
I mean, it's one thing for me to.
And it's a greater fool thing. I wish I had thought there were going to be that many fools out there to push it over 100,000.
Well, whenever I sit there and rail about Oracle or Microsoft, and I say companies this size, when they get to this amount times revenue, that's what happened in 2000, and we collapsed ridiculously. And I'm not hoping that again. But then I look at it and I say, well, why should I be worried about Microsoft at 13 times revenue when Bitcoin's infinite times revenue, and it's valued the same way? I mean, that's what I'm saying. We're reaching a point here where we're tulips. We're kind of almost in the tulip mania, aren't we?
Yeah. No, there is some of that going on. There's a lot of similarities with the ridiculousness that was around that. And if you're truly just buying something because you think that you're going to be able to sell it to someone else at a higher price, and you can't explain why that price is going to be higher, I can explain to you why. I can give you an argument for NVIDIA stock going up, and that's because their revenues continue to grow. And there are not a lot of other places that you can find growth in the business world right now. So, they're probably attracting more money than they should. I can give you an explanation on it. I can't give you an explanation other than more buying pressure than selling pressure in a lot of things that are going on these days.
Well, how about commenting a little bit? I'll repeat a little bit Cliff Notes version, the first part of the show, when I don't know how many people have had to do this in their life, but I did a lot of this, both at Allied Airlines and at Pullman. And to be perfectly blunt, I did a bunch of it for the CBOE when we were supposed to buy the Peacoast.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the guy who was what the hell was his name? Really nice guy. He was the controller. What the hell was his name? Alan Dean.
Yeah.
Real nice guy. Real nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started getting these numbers from the Peacoast about how they wanted to build this building and do all this other kind of stuff. And we're getting all these numbers from them and these predictions. And I said, Alan, who do you have working on this? And he goes, well, we had an analyst a couple years ago, but he left and we didn't replace him, didn't think we needed one. I said, so you got nobody? He goes, no, this is not. He goes, he was a controller. He goes, I'm really good at accounting. I never was good at something like that. I go, why don't you give me the numbers? I'll go through them. I won't tell anybody I did it. I'll hand it back to you because I really liked him. I mean, I thought he was terrific.
Yeah. He was a wonderful guy. I overlapped with him as well.
And so I went through the whole
mess. I talk about him in corporate finance classes.
Go ahead. You know what he used to do when he handed out the board agenda to these mopes? he'd put a dollar in one of the pages. if the person didn't come up with the buck, you know he didn't read it.
Well, that's fantastic.
Anyway, so I sit there and I go through the whole mess, the timing, the time frame, the cost, this, that, and the other stuff, and I essentially listed, you know, 10 what-ifs, and if this one shows up, if you move this one here. I mean, people, unless you've done it, you don't really, I mean, sensitivity analysis is something you do. But, I mean, if you were going to do something like that, you'd have to say, okay, how many people are going to be on the floor? Are we going to grow? How many people are going to have badges? By the way, they wanted to do an office building. What's the rental rate? Who's going to be there? Are some of the firms that are currently in the business, are they going to move there because it's closer? There's a million things you have to think about when you do stuff like this. And,
yeah.
And I you have to have a view of the future. I mean, when I did stuff for Pullman, I'd have to put down there, I'm assuming, you know, 2 contracts and 60 cars a year. If I put down 0 cars a year, we don't need anything, right? I mean, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I wonder when we look at these gross numbers, when I say gross numbers, big numbers, what are the bears, where do they think they're going to get 70,000 people to pay whatever, 50 grand for a seat license? I mean, what are they seeing the ticket prices going to be like in 2030? Are they going to be $400 a ticket? Same as they are now, less than. I mean, how do people pull this crap out of the air? I mean, if it's other people's money you're dealing with, it's a lot easier, right? But if it's your own, how does anybody even do this? To any sort of a major, how many people are going to drive to Arlington? It's a 50-minute drive, for God's sake. I mean, is everybody going to get bleep faced in the parking lot and try and drive home? I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, who's putting the variables together? We're talking about $5 billion, which you know, if we can get this at 6%, of course we're going to want the state to try and get it at 3%. But if we get it at 6%, that's a $300 million check somebody's going to write every year. Right now, the Bears are making probably $200 million.
So basically, you got to make $1 million a day doing something.
Yeah, I mean,
how are you going to do that?
How are you going to do that?
Well, you know, I think they're the hopeful thing, and I'd love to see the financials behind the Cubs before they, you know, took out my car wash and put all that extra stuff in there.
You know the story on that, don't you?
What?
That property?
No, I do not know the story on that. All I know is I used to wash my dog in my car there.
And they had the hot dog stand too, right? And the players used to park there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Cubs, when they shifted it from the Tribune to these guys, they claimed they had a deed to it. They never had a deed to that property.
Okay.
That property was... Remember the old railroad track that went down the middle of it?
Yeah.
It was an easement for that railroad that went out of business like 50 years ago or 60 years ago. The same railroad track that goes down through the convent?
Yeah, yeah.
That was an easement.
I didn't realize that same thing, but yeah.
Yeah, that was an easement. Yeah. And the Cubs just used it and charged people rent for it for like 8 decades. How special is that? Yeah. And then,
that's extremely special.
And they actually sent a proof to the city that it was theirs. The thing had been copied so much you could not read it. They said, "Oh, this is ours." It was an easement, and they just used it. And now then they ended up. I mean, if you were back in those days when the 305 games started and everything, and everybody starting to buy these bars, you could have paid $1.5 million for property to build a bar.
Oh yeah, one of those rooftops went up for sale. I remember when I was on the floor in the early 90s, one of the buildings with the rooftop went up for sale, and I think it was bought within 45 minutes.
Well, that whole property...
And at kind of a reasonable price.
Well, that whole property where they now have where the kids are playing ball out there, and they got the building there for the plumbing supply company?
Was it
some Gallagher? That whole... You know, the Cubs finally said, okay, we'll clear this up, we'll buy it. Guess how much? Guess how much they paid for it.
I have no idea. But
what do you think it would be worth? Let's put it that way. How many million?
I'm trying to think of the size of it.
The Gallagher buildings on it. Anyway, they paid like $450 grand for it.
Really? So, I would have thought in the millions.
Yeah.
Well, I would have thought about 10 times that.
Yeah. So they ended up. It probably was nowhere near the rent that they got on the easement for the last 60 years.
You know, and I wonder out loud if the Sox bought any property around U.S. Cellular or whatever they call it now, if they were able to get the same sort of deals. Or you would think, you would automatically think it would be cheaper around in their neighborhood. But,
well, the parking, you know, the parking lot south of the place is where the old stadium was, so that was theirs to start with.
Yeah.
So now I think,
but I just wonder if the Sox have been have been able to sneak the same things past people.
But there were a bunch of bars across 35th Street where the new place now is. New place. The, Now those places almost got condemned, right?
They probably, I have no idea. I wasn't living in Chicago at that time, but I moved just as they opened the new stadium.
I think there might have been some public housing. I think there was there part of the Armory parking lot south of there? Boy, I should know this history. They got all that land. Now the parking lots across the other side of the tracks, I don't know where that was. If those were parking lots for the old place, they might have been. Hey, we got to go to break. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 114. Our big stocks are off to the moon here. And I'm going to quiz Russell about, what if somebody gave you $30 million today to manage? I wish somebody would. And, you know, we've had a lot of clients the last couple of weeks, actually. What do you do with it here? Do you pile into... And, well, this will be a question for Russell. He's the professor.
Yes, it will be.
Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 32. NASDAQ Futures up 127. We're cheering now that the wholesale price number somehow declined 0.1% in August. This is with Trump's new head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics in charge for his first month. I'm not so sure. I don't know about that. I'm not going to say. Anyway, we'll go around over to the rest of the world here. We'll do Europe shares rise ahead of key inflation data. Well, they're not ahead of them anymore. DAX up 10, call that flat. FTSE up 15. CAC round up 30.4%. Let's go to stuff that's more current here. The bonds unchanged at 2.66. That's the 10-year. Japan is 1.57. UK is they're unchanged at 4.64. Oil, which has been around $63. Guess what? $63.42. It's been there like forever. Brent up 73 cents, $67.12. Gold, which is, I'm going to have to quiz Russell on this because I have an awful lot of people in the gold stocks. Gold up $6, $36.88. Silver up 27 cents, $41.62. It's got to be close to a record on silver. Foreign exchange, the euro 117, which is pretty much unchanged. The British pound 135. So The Dow is actually down a little bit in the last week or so. We have crypto is up $2,100. Bitcoin, 113,429. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs won, finally.
They finally did. It is 7:35 here in Chicago, and it's September 10th. Yep, the Cubs won. It was against the Braves, and they won 6-1. Well, the White Sox lost to the Braves 5-4, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 3-5. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 63 degrees. Getting warm up throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 79. Going to be a little bit of cloud, a little bit of sun all throughout. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 83 degrees. They're going to have it much warmer. They're going to have a high of 109. Kind of similar. Let's see. Sun, breezy, and hot. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for extended periods of time. And Chicago traffic is not looking much better today. No major accidents to report, but nearly every inbound expressway is pretty clogged up. If you're going from the start to the Jane Burn on basically any direction, it's going to take you about an hour. I think the longest right now is looking like, or was it? It was Thorndale on the Eisenhower to the Jane Burn. It's going to take you about 68 minutes today. So that's all I got.
Yeah, ouch on that.
Yeah, it's bad.
So, Russell, what do you make of the these prices?
Maybe we would have deflation.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know that's a silly number. I'm being silly about that, but I expect that to be a negative number.
But I mean, when are we? I think the answer is never.
Mm-hmm.
When is, other than people just kind of sort of having a feeling about it? I'll give you an example. I mean, Audrey Reynos is in real estate, and whenever people, whenever you buy a house now, you have somebody come in and do the inspection and all that stuff, and whenever anything needs to have happen, people put it on the thing, and oh man, the front window sucks, so you got to take that off the $500,000 price of the house, and a window will be $10,000 or some number, and it's funny. I've done work on the place I live for now pushing 20 years, and I actually have receipts going back all that way. And, of course, the receipts are such where you can't... I don't know who designed the paper, but after a year you can't read them, right? But anyway, mm-hmm. I replaced a whole bunch of windows in this place over the whole time. And I have some people that do that, and there's a place at 39th Street it's a small neighborhood place. They'll make them up for me and so forth. And the last time that I priced them out for three windows on the second floor, we ended up not doing it because we had other stuff we had to do with the roof instead. They wanted $1,900 for the three windows. And I would have had a picture window and then two on one on each side, a regular window. And I would have had to pay my guys, $500-$600 to put them in for me. And I thought that was outrageous. That if you called up one of the guys on TV and said, I want those, we're talking 10-12G. I mean, these numbers have gone to absolutely the roof on any sort of service you do anywhere. So the idea that the services could be down or something, I can't even imagine that. I mean, if you were to take anything from 5 years ago and put it in today, it's a matter of fact, didn't I sent you that site? Next week we'll talk about it. There's a guy that has a site that he takes all the stuff from the CPI, and you can look at just that thing, and it'll say cans of beer or something, and you can figure out what that piece is of the CPI over the last something years. I tell you what, you compare some of this stuff, they're out of their minds. If you go back 15, 20 years, they'll say it's up, it's doubled. No, it hasn't. It's up five times or something. I mean, we're not even... What do you think would happen if they actually did a redo of this thing over the last 15 years and actually put the real numbers in there?
Oh, we'd probably have double the inflation that we think we've had at least. And the reason I say that is, I would always talk about the McDonald's breakfast I would buy at Loyola. And that has actually doubled over the last... My typical breakfast has doubled over the last 7 years. So if that price is doubled, the rule of seven, where you can figure out a rate and how quickly, how much time will your money, based on compounding, how much time will it take for your money to double?
Yeah.
And that rule of seven would basically say if something's doubled in about 7 years, that the inflation rate's been around 8%.
Yeah, 7.5, 8, right in there. His rule
of
7.
Yeah, which is probably double the average at least. So yeah, I think it would be twice. I think inflation over the last, 20, 30 years has probably been, in reality, twice what they tell us it is.
I think it's probably at least it, maybe two.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you put a real number on the medical stuff.
I think you could. I would be confident going on one of the business networks that I wouldn't get shouted down if I said that. I think if you start
you'd be shouted down,
but not justifiably so.
Quick question before we go into the balancing the portfolio. If you went back to 2000,
mm-hmm.
certainly 2007, but let's say 2000, and you were to shift the 6.5% of the basket that these liars tell you is percentage paid on medical stuff, and compare it to it's now 20% of the economy. If you were to move that number from 6.5 of the basket now up to, and let's be nice, 18%, I would wager a bet that if you went back and redid the CPI based on that, that mm-hmm. we have been damn near in a recession for 25 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In real terms, you could easily say that.
That's not the message we're getting from anybody, is it?
Oh, no, it's not. But, I don't know if every generation, I do okay, but I still feel like I'm behind the eight ball all the time with trying to keep up with everything. Just financially. I just always feel like that, even though I really, probably am doing better than a good portion of people.
You've got four people. Yeah. If somebody needs a new car, you write a check for 60 G plus tax? Jesus.
So, yeah, I professors do okay, and I do consulting work that kind of supplements stuff, and I'm kind of have to do the consulting work right now because I got two in college, etc. I can only imagine how the majority of people are struggling. I'm trying to say this without sounding like a complete jerk.
You have a terrific family. I can buy myself a 25-year-old pickup, go to my mechanic, and it's fine for me. I don't give a crap. I drive. If I had a daughter, I'm buying her something that's pretty damn new. I don't want her breaking down. If I break down, it's one thing, but I don't want her breaking down.
Exactly. Yeah. And with daughters, you're going to do everything that you can to keep them
without
safe.
A doubt.
But then
they're going to take care of you when you're old, though. You'll get that all back.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm counting on one of them and not the other. and they know who they are. But we talked about this a lot, but it just, the day to day of trying to stay ahead, if you, at the end of each year, if you just reassess where you're at relative to the previous year, I can't imagine that there's a good number of people that feel like they're actually getting ahead, even if they do, are making more money as far as quality of life goes.
All right, we got to shift gears into, suppose you're in your next life you're helping me manage money, which I think you do for some people, but I don't want to ask. Somebody walks in, hey, here's 200 mil. I got a bunch of stocks, and whoever it is, he or she has been terrific. They've got a whole bunch of Apple, which has been life changer for people. They got a whole bunch of Amazon. They got a whole bunch of this stuff. Maybe even have some Oracle 2000. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they've got five or six stocks. And I'll put in that this year, a lot of my people didn't want to be in some of these stocks a couple years ago. So we thought if the dollar was going to keep doing this, meaning money in the system, that the metals would move. That gold would eventually become. Plus, I really felt that the gold miners were lagging the gold itself. So I'll admit I was early, and I don't know if I was smart or stubborn, All of a sudden, this year, they've gone straight up. I mean, it's up 50% easy. We started the year at 33, and now they're 67-something. Okay, well, that was then. Now, okay, you and I are sitting there, and I go, okay, Russell, I got these five stocks. You know, we've got other stuff, too, but we've got these five stocks, and by the way, we got a bleep load of gold, and we got a bunch of silver. Now what do we do? I don't think we would duplicate that portfolio exactly at these prices compared to 15 years ago when whoever, maybe people bought the Amazon or the Oracle or whatever. So what do we do with it? I mean, do we puke it all out? Do we buy puts on everything? I mean, I don't know. I mean, today, GDX has been one of my biggest investments for my people. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm buying at $67.50. Now what do?
I'd be collaring that stuff. I really would. Because you know that we can always do more on the upside than you expect. So I wouldn't want to, but I wouldn't want to pay up for the puts because I'm not sure you're going to need them quite yet. So
they're expensive.
I know. That's why I'm and to quote one of my favorite people, and I think one of yours as well, Marty Kearney, if you're looking at buying expensive options, look to sell some options too.
Yeah.
And so that's why I threw the collar thing out there. It also gives some consideration to maybe, if I had new money to put to work, you know, the ETFs that buffer things for you, where they have a put spread that'll guard against a part of a drop, and you also sell a call, so you're giving up some upside.
I'd rather you and I did that than pay somebody else to do it.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I like those strategies an awful lot. But you could probably do it better because you have a lot more flexibility than the ones than the folks that are doing it in more of a in a very rules based format.
Let me ask you this: there are times
where they have to do it and they have to do the exact same thing every month because that's what their rule says.
Well, let me ask you this: there because if you know what you're doing in options, and you know it is sort of interesting. I mean. As I walked into the paint store out in Homer Glen, Russell, and I didn't realize that the guy, you know, I mean, we had a lot of people who came to our seminars, and he was actually applying at PTI, but he worked more with Dan than me. You know, you lose track of what people look like. So I walk in, and Audrey was doing something, so I'm just checking out the paint prices because I used to do a lot at work, and I'm just always curious. So the guy says, "Hey, how you doing, Chief?" I look at him. Of course, I wished I knew his name. He goes, "What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm just checking out the paint prices." And he goes, "Why don't we make a deal?" I go, "What's the deal?" He goes, "I don't try and manage my money, and you don't try and paint." there's a certain, but I'm saying that there's more to this than meets the eye. I mean, everything's.
Yeah.
But my question is, there are times during your and my lifetime in the business where, if you think the markets are priced whatever, fairly or maybe even cheaply, and let's pick a stock here. Let's say, Meta. It's trading $7.65. I don't have anybody in Meta, so I can talk about this one. Now, if you're worried about the world going to hell in a handbasket, I mean, you want to have put protection, right? Now, when that happens, if it happens, of course, if it never happens, all you're doing is, you're just like, it's like somebody who's never wrecked their car paying insurance every year, right? But sometimes with a trade in 765, you and I together might say, "God, this stock's been beaten up so much." Maybe say it's down to 500 or 400. We might say, "Yeah, we'd like some protection, but I don't really think we need to, protect it all the way to zero." And if it was down to 400, we might say we can buy the 400 350 put spread, and that's probably good enough. Probably is a tough word there, right? It's sort of like if you go out and buy a Mercedes, and I'm not saying you're going to, and it costs you $100,000. You might say, okay, if somebody bangs into me or I bang into the garage door, I'm only going to get $50,000 of insurance collision because the thing, hopefully I'm not going to drive it into a river, where the whole thing's toast.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure, though, at this level that I could buy the 765, 700 put spread in Meta and have that be enough if the world changes. I think this stuff is too high to do that with. I don't know that I can pick. I mean, you hear the idiots, the people on TV all the time saying, We're going to get this 5% correction, but don't worry. It's healthy. Well, 5% would mean Meta's down $35. I don't know where it's written that this can only go to 730. And don't worry about it. Yeah. It can't go any lower. But I think at these levels, that's pretty brave, I think. I'm just saying.
You know, well, to take the other side of it, there's always this funny psychological level when you get a 20% drawdown. And, I'd maybe take a look at that for being my short put.
I would agree. But,
You see that an awful lot. You see that a lot in SPX, where people will buy a put, and the one that they sell against it is 20% out of the money.
Okay. I'm going to say that 99% of the time, you would be correct, officer. However, if we run back here to, say, 2000, let's see, on 3/1/2000, the QQQs were $120. And if we ran
the Qs will give you a 50% drawdown in a heartbeat.
Well, I'm saying, you know what they get down to? You know what they get down to?
What?
$20.49.
Yeah, that can happen in the tech space.
And so what I'm saying is, I'm sure there was somebody on TV at the time to say, well, it's a little pricey at 120, but boy, oh boy, it's a screaming buy at 110. How'd that guy make out?
Not well. I know some Enron people that did that the whole way down too. So that does happen.
We were talking a little bit yesterday about the Bear Stearns people and how we had a client there that had lost some money like the year before, and I never expanded on that at all, Russell, and thought, well, gee,
mm-hmm.
Bear Stearns was. I never thought any of that would. I know he was in some investment that he got through some people at Bear Stearns. You don't grill your clients and say, oh, what exactly, especially when they lose money mm-hmm. somewhere. It's not like they want to give you the whole story. But I never put two and two together that somehow Bear Stearns was in trouble. I mean, should I have? I don't know.
I think Bear Stearns got pushed into trouble.
I think they did too.
I think they did. In the way that it happened, in my mind, is everybody decided that we needed to shed a big firm. And they went after Bear Stearns, and they went after Bear Stearns in a way that the buy side firms, a lot of them had their hedge fund accounts with Bear Stearns. And it's like they all collectively started pulling them and shorting the stock at the same time.
What the?
You know, it's like everybody, a lot of people seem to have taken a short position in the stock and then started to do things that were, and then stopped doing business with them.
Yeah, I remember that part.
At a very high level. That's really just a very high, brief level.
Russell, there was some sort of a couple of years before. Didn't some weird story about some firm went under and a lot of the rest of the firms ponied up money to kind of pay off the people that were down money or something, and Bear Stearns refused to participate.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that story was?
It was the long-term capital.
Okay.
It was the long-term capital situation. Bear was the one big bank that wasn't going to play along. And they basically had a target on their back ever since then. I had forgotten that part of the story. And in fact, the second Wall Street movie is in a very high level based on that. They even say that like one of the firms that they're going after didn't play ball in some situation. And what they were referring to was, in a fictional way, what happened with Bear Stearns not helping out with long-term capital.
And they ended up, I remember, ever tell you my old story on long-term capital? I was on the board at the time, and the marketing, head of the marketing committee. I wasn't head of the marketing department. They had people that did that. But I would go to the, can I use the term boondoggle?
Oh, yes.
They shipped us out. They shipped us. This is the same time that the CBOE was thinking about buying the Peacoast. So they send me out to the old Yankee Stadium in a skybox, which really wasn't a skybox. It was behind the grandstand. But it had, the obligatory shrimp and bar and TVs. So it was a week after the long-term capital thing. the market was getting its ass kicked because of that, and all of a sudden it had this huge rally, pretty much pushed along by an expiration Friday. They didn't used to have expirations every day. It was only on a Friday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
On expiration morning in the OEX, the Fed lowered the interest rates, like 10 o'clock in the morning, not at a meeting. So the market, which had been down, flies to the upside. Evidently, and this is how, when people wonder why does this chief knucklehead get his view of government, the people that were really in trouble, they told they were going to do that, and they allowed them essentially to buy before the announcement came out.
Mm-hmm.
Which everybody goes, word up. And so I go to this thing, I'm just a regular schmuck. So one of the guys from one of the firms, I forget who he was, one of the institutional buy-side guys, or whatever those guys were, he says to me, hey, you know, one of my friends from the Fed called me, knowing we were having this shindig tonight, and asked me if there was going to be a guy there who traded in the OEX. And the OEX at the time was the second biggest exchange in the world. We had 350 mm-hmm. people in there. It was bigger than the MX, bigger than the rest of the SIBO. The only exchange bigger was the New York Stock Exchange. It was bigger than any other exchange, London, you name it, in one pit. And the guy says, how bad did they hurt the traders? And my, all of a sudden, you know, the hair on my neck, if I had any, all of a sudden just springs to attention, right? And I'm mm-hmm. going, where is this question going? And I said, you mean that people were front run those numbers? He goes, well, yeah. And he said, how bad was it? I said, well, two or three of my friends I've known forever basically were carried out and will never trade again. Oh, man, that's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we kept going down, and I traded next to a put broker. So I mostly had puts, and they kept wanting to buy them. So I was buying them ahead of people because I knew I had to sell them. And I'm sitting there going, this is just getting so weird. Out of the blue, Russell, I bought a whole bunch of these out-of-the-money calls. And I said, you know, mm-hmm. if this thing turns around...
Just in case.
And it turns out I ended up having a nice day trading. But I looked at what my position would have been. I would have lost... This is a long time ago, and I'm one guy. I would have lost something like $250,000 on my put position. And the calls I bought made me $251,000.
Yeah, that was the hardest $1,000 you ever made.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there... What the bleep? And it turns out these guys did this on purpose to refloat whoever was in trouble on his long-term capital.
Mm-hmm.
And basically took it out of the hide of other people. And, you know, so my views of the world are sort of founded.
Oh, no, I think totally founded.
And for somehow or another...
And you don't think about that. You don't... I mean, when I say you, it you know, the individuals that are kind of watching the markets, et cetera, they don't really think about the human part of that of those gigantic ziggy-zaggy days.
And what would?
But there's a pretty nasty human component to it.
Because what would, when my investors, people who trade through us and PTI, and other investors listening to the show, you deal with a world that's I'm going to say easy in the sense that if you have an account at PTI or any place, you're going to get a statement that says, oh, by the way, you got 1,000 IBM, it's trading 260. Guess what? You got 260 grand. And there's no problem with that. Your options clear through OCC. You don't care who the other side of the trade is. Well, what happened in 2007 and so forth, and even with the long-term capital, a lot of these trades are between these firms. So you might have a position with Morgan Stanley and have the other position with, you know, Drexel Burnham or somebody, and you think for a second that you're flat. No, you're not. Our clients are flat because their position is with OCC. You're not flat. So what happened with Bear Stearns? Who were the other guys? Who was the first one that went out? Was it Lehman?
No, Bear and then Lehman.
It
was the other way. Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, you know, some people in Washington and the Fed are going, well, we didn't like those two firms anyway. And all of a sudden, it meant Goldman Sachs is bleep out of luck because one of those firms owes them a lot of money and they're gone. And all of a sudden, Paulson, who, by the way, is ex-Goldman Sachs like anybody can ever be an ex-Marine, oh, man, we got to save Goldman Sachs, right? So they ended up given a bunch of money, what, to AIG? Well, who's the more? A bunch of money to AIG, who turned around and gave it to Goldman because they were the other side of that transaction, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's this to think that this kind of crap has not happened along the line, and that's why whenever anybody is so confident in the market, don't worry, my Apple, my NVIDIA is going to 500, you know, I'll never... Well, careful with that.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, you and I become... just because we know some of this stuff has made us a little bit jaded, eh?
Yeah, very much so, and it just gets worse as you get older.
God. Hey, love to have your daughter back. And where's your better half, Dr. Ademiak?
Dr. Ademiak, she's up in West Lafayette.
We got to get her back on. Everybody loves her. So do I.
Okay, I will let her know that.
You know, we have next Wednesday. Who's coming out? I forgot to tell Kevin. First hour, we have one of my softball buddies. He's in the steel industry.
Oh, fine.
And he's going to come out of, you know, is the who. You know, who are the players? And, you know, we just got this big deal with U.S. Steel where, what, Trump's in charge of the place or not in charge, but he gets...
Yeah.
It's kind of... And my question is, okay, is U.S. Steel even really a player other than the name U.S. on him? And this guy and another guy both tell me if U.S. Steel went out tomorrow, nobody know the difference.
Really? They're a drop in the bucket in this day and age?
Well, so we're going to go through the other six names, and he's going to tell us, oh, this guy does this guy does that. And I said, what if somebody needs a bow of an aircraft carrier? This is one of my recycle guys I meet at the local place. And he goes, you take your spec sheet, you offer it out there for bid, and four people are going to give you a bid. I said, so if U.S. Steel wasn't there, he goes, nobody knows the difference. You'll get a bid before the
thing. Then there might be three.
Yeah, there might be three. Yeah. Anyway, Russell, take care of yourself. Are you here or are you in Indiana?
I'm in Indiana. So
what about your poor dog if you're not there?
My wife is taking care of the poor dog.
Yeah, but I think he has a much... He's not in her lap. He's always in your lap when you do the show.
I know. Apparently, there's a little sadness going on, but she'll be okay. Plus, I'm getting a house down here, so I'll start bringing them down with me.
Oh, good. Anyway, all right, SP Futures up 31, NASDAQ Futures up 116. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.